all of you knows me, but I'm Stéphane Belloni, Director of Pre-Sales, Tech Partnerships. Joined the company 6 years ago. My first day at Vulog was a day when Ivo BCA was in the office presenting their service with 200 cars. And I'm so happy to see the presentation that Amitis did with so many services and cars in the street. Very successful. And it comes also with some optimization on the operations that you presented. But we're going to focus more on that in that session. I will let everyone introduce himself, introduce the service, because that's also linked to the type of service you're operating. Obviously, we have a large diversity of customers with a large diversity of services, and you will not operate the service the same way in a location with a different service, free-floating in a city without any infrastructure for charging, for instance, or vice versa, free-floating in a city where you have charging infrastructure, station-based potentially. So we have a large diversity with also dealership-based management. So we're going to talk about that with the people that we have in this panel, and it's also very open to your questions. We hope to hear from you also on the magic that you've done to make it work from the very beginning. And I remember that you said, Balint, that at the beginning the profitability was not the goal in the two first years. But then after that, what have you done to make it work and to be profitable? So I'll let you introduce yourself and the service you're operating.
I work at IMO, Stockholm. We started 2018 with a fully free-floated EV service. We have been transcending into a semi-free-floating with parking fees, basically, in Stockholm. So we have a lot of garages that we use. I started 2019, so I've been there for a while, but I was not in the beginning.
Thank you. Balint, you don't need to introduce yourself because you did it in the previous session. I think it's important for you to share, so don't hesitate to jump in if you have questions. I would start with the first question about the challenges you're facing for the operations. Okay, we're going to talk about how we are managing the challenges, but first, what are the challenges that you're facing in the different services that you're operating with different setup that you've been facing at the beginning and that you're facing today in the current operations? Who wants to start?
I can start. I think there are many challenges, but we just...
One of the challenges we can think about is staffing, especially when we just launched the service. So back in summer 2021, we were preparing for this 200 vehicles launch in Lyon, and we just had some benchmark, we had some ideas of the use that we would have on the fleet. So we made some projections, but it was super hard, and it was from nothing. We were launching in a non-mature market, so there was no free floating before us, so we didn't really know the size of this market, how mature it was. And we decided to go very lean at the beginning. We to very limited stuff and then to scale the stuff as long as demand was coming. And I think this was a challenge because we were always running a bit behind in terms of stuff, so we're not overstaffed, not what we wanted to have. But the impact of that was that the local team that we have in Lyon, the management team, was very on-site, helping on the field, just to make sure the service was working. So that's what we had at the beginning. We have now a mix between temp and permanent employees, and we really use the temp to adjust the workforce depending on the activity we have and the need we have. We have some seasonality, of course. All the activities we do on the field, so relocating, recharging, refueling, we don't have the same number of tasks at the moment of the year. For example, in summer we have longer trips, so we need more refueling, but maybe less cleaning because the trips last for longer. So we just adapt, and what really helps here is to have a very multitasking agents. So basically our agents are able to either clean a car, relocate the car. They are equipped with very light stuff, so they have the cleaning stuff in the backpack, and they just move with e-scooters or kick scooters or whatever, but they are very flexible. So that really helps. And one of the other challenges we had in terms of dimensioning the stuff was that we wanted to have a 24/7 staff on field, because an emergency can come anytime. And it's really hard to have 24/7 when at the beginning the number of tasks is low. And again, for this, we have managed to have some people available that were doing other jobs that we could call when we need them. So it's really the choice that we made at the beginning was not to start with like a full blast with full permanent employees on numbers that we didn't really know before we had experience. So I think dimensioning the staff at the beginning is really key, and going with a lean organization really helped when we launched the A1 Go. So we launched with five guys on the field. Now we have 12, so we really scaled progressively.
How many of them are employees of UNGO?
So we have a mix. So for the operations, it's outsourced to a third-party company mostly. Because what we want to do at UNGO is to pay for what we get. So basically, most of the tasks that are completed, we pay if they are completed, and we don't pay on the hourly rate basis, which also drives a lot of efficiency in terms of cost. It also so the contractor needs to manage the productivity of the team himself, so it's not on us. And it's really important. The productivity at the beginning is obviously lower than it is later on when the utilization is getting higher and higher. So for us, it was a better option to focus on growing the service action, marketing action, and building a user base rather than spending time on managing productivity of agents and the field. So outsourcing was really the main choice we did at the beginning.
Martin?
Yeah, I would say for us, the operation part is the hardest one is to keep the availability up. The most important, you have yearly inspections, you have damages. Closer. So to keep the availability up, you're doing all the cleaning. And of course, we have charging also. And reallocation. So keeping the availability up is definitely the...
So in terms of investment, you're investing more to keep the availability up, or what's the how many people for how many cars, basically?
So we actually don't have so many people working on moving the cars and so on, as you could think. I think we have a morning team, but actually, back in the day, we had people working, you know, daytime. But the traffic in Stockholm is really bad, and we have cleaning streets. Some days you cannot stand on that road or even that side of the road. So we have optimized it a lot. So we have morning teams instead, like early morning before people wake up. And then we use this cleaning street to reallocate the cars to good areas, because then the streets are all clean. And it's hard to find parking in Stockholm on the roads. So we're using that. We're using a third-party cleaning company. And then we create a ticket for So we combine the washing of the cars, and if it needs to be moved from one of these cleaning streets, then they do kind of two in one. And then we have a night team that also reallocate the cars or put it to charging and so on.
What's the ratio in number of employees of IMO?
Complete, I think in the office is 30. Yeah, but it's hourly based. So during daytime, like it's one guy that handles all. That means, you know. So it's quite efficient.
Challenges and how do we resolve them, right? Yes. Operational challenge. So let me pick two. The first one is car damage. A huge cost. Approximately, I always say that it's very simple. We get one car damage per car per year with an average cost of 1,000 euro, the car damage. That's just the damage itself. And on top of that, the service time that it takes to fix that car is our other loss, because for 2 or 3 weeks or 3 months, the car is not making money. Obviously, the best is to tackle the root cause. So how can we achieve that we have less frequently car damage? And that starts again with, can you exclude some of your customers who are, you know, unprofitable customers, strengthening the onboarding, you know, you ask for not 1 year of driver's license, but you need to have your driver's license for 5 years. One joke that I said that if this business doesn't succeed, I will create a car sharing that I will call 40, and only people above 40 can enter the customers, because when we looked at the correlation between car damage and behavior and age, at 40 you see a very, very clear you know, improvement on the profitability of the customer. If you steal the idea, then I will ask for some small percent of your profit. So obviously you can do a little bit of managing your customers, but it's not going to swamp it. The second one is, if you cannot reduce the amount of car damages, is that how can you fix it cheaper and quicker? So again, we had, I think Amitis mentioned that we also stuck up on some parts, front bumper, rear bumper, those kind of things, and we make frequent visits to the garages where they repair our cars, so that they know it's important. We need to do it. If we just send the cars and never show up in person and ask on the deadlines and repair it, then it's not going to. It's a lot of going after the small things. I would also say that fleet strategy. So pick cars that are cheaper to fix. And the fourth point of the solution is insurance and deciding to have no insurance. When I say insurance, is the cost. So insuring your own damage, not third-party damage. Third-party you must have. So actually, we are making a big jump. And from January 1st, we will have no more Costco insurance on our fleet of 500 cars. So all of the damage that occurs will be our cost. We kind of made that transition. 2022, we increased our deductible from something like 300 euros to 1,000 euros. So that's already almost moving into the no casco, and now we have completely no casco. I think that will be approximately a cost saving between 20 to 25% on car damages. This is our target. Because the way the insurance work is that the first year, the insurance money was losing money on us, so they increased the insurance fee. The second year, they're still losing money on us, and they increased the insurance fee again. And the third year, it was like almost they were almost not agreeing to insure our fleet, because the car damages were getting. And then I said, no, this is not a good point, that now we're improving our processes, and now we switch to no casco, because, I think you get the idea. I think it's a huge strategic decision. Unless you can really, really control your car damage, which we cannot, they happen, then we at least decrease the cost. And obviously the taking pictures before and after, that really helps once the damage happens, then the collection of the car damage fee. So that's also very important, you know, the pictures before and after.
Okay, and in terms of the team working on the operations, how many people do you have for how many cars approximately?
So for 500 cars, we have two, I would say, technical managers who are sending the cars to the garage, to the service, to the annual maintenance, regular things, and then 14 fully employed people to fuel the cars, to gas up the cars, and to rebalance the cars.
How frequently do you do that? Do you do that on the cars?
Whenever it's needed, right? So whenever the autonomy level goes below, I don't know, a certain 30 kilometer for electric and 54 gas cars, then we create a ticket and then they are recharged.
Okay, so you do that vehicle per vehicle?
Yeah.
How about the others? Are you doing that vehicle per vehicle, the maintenance of the cars, or is it something that you do by batch of vehicles that you review every week, for instance, or 2 weeks? Or
no, for us we do it when it's needed, and we don't do that batch.
Okay.
Yeah. Same. Yeah. When needed.
Okay. Do you have any specificities with electric vehicles that you think about in terms of maintenance?
I mean, it's to make sure that they don't steal the charging capability.
No,
it takes longer time. That's what it does, right? To charge instead of put gasoline.
On EVs, what we have noticed, also we have 100 EVs in the fleet, is that people just have very little knowledge about EVs. They don't really know how to drive them in an eco-friendly mode. They consume a lot of energy. Sometimes they don't even realize that they are having an EV. They don't realize there is no noise, so just run out of battery very far away from the home zone. So that stuff. So there is a part which is about educating the users. So recently, for example, we just added a voice prompt in our EVs saying, hey, you just entered in an EV car, make sure the autonomy is enough for you to take the most way on the way back. So this kind of helps, but still we have customers going far away, not paying attention to the autonomy. So we need to work more on educating. And then recharging, for us, is very tough because we operate fully in 313, so we don't have stations with chargers. So it's our agents taking the cars to charging stations and bringing them back in the 313 area. And where it's tough is to find fast chargers. At the moment, we charge an EV in 1 hour and a half, which is quite okay, but still, it's not as fast as fueling a tank. We only charge EVs at night when the activity is lower, of course, and that's also the advantage of having agents being able to do other stuff. When they plug the car, they go and for relocation or fueling one of the hybrid cars, they just don't wait. And at the moment, we are always discussing with energy providers that say, oh, but with our chargers, you can charge your car in 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 20 minutes. But for us, it's still too long because we wouldn't like to have an agent waiting for even 20 minutes just next to the car for waiting for it to charge. So in terms of efficiency, it's tough to have. Tougher, of course, to have EVs, but then we still have some savings in terms of cost, especially when we think about the difference between the cost of fuel and the cost of electricity, still true at the moment. And in terms of usage, we have also noticed that EVs are very liked by our customers. They like the experience, and the utilization rate is higher for EVs than for hybrids or fuel cars. So yes, it's a bit tougher to operate. It really depends on the charging network, but the advantage is of having EVs. And in the past months, we also charged our EVs in private parking. So we did some partnerships with local operators, and we have reserved space to charge our EVs. When we use public infrastructure, the issue that can happen is that there are some other vehicles not charging but parked in the location, preventing us from parking and charging. So we are never sure of what we'll find when we go to public infrastructure. Will it be free? Will it be operating? Will it work? So having some private areas where you can charge your car, I think, is a key asset for operation.
I can add, we have a bit of an advantage also. We have a lot of garage where we have charging in. And also we have tried charging in center in the past. We have now changed that, so every time you end your trip with in one of our garages, you also get some incentive back, like money. which helps the customer is actually quite good at helping us with charging.
A question? Yeah?
I don't think we do. There's enough charging in Stockholm, and we definitely have enough charging in our garages. We use some public fast chargers, but mostly in the garages.
So we have a tough situation with the electric cars. I told you guys that we are actually cutting the numbers back drastically from 30% to 10%. Our finding is that currently we are fully servicing the electric cars, so the customers do only 1% of the charging and we do 99%. And the customer never is able to park an electric car to a charger because there is no infrastructure for that in our current model. And my understanding is that it will never be profitable if it works like that. So I was in Amsterdam a couple of weeks ago, and every street has 2, 3, 4 AC to slow chargers. And so in their electric car sharing businesses, almost every trip finishes on a charger where the customer attaches the charger, and every trip starts from a charger. So even if you have a 100 kilometer range cars, it's enough because it's always fully charged. We completely miss that infrastructure. We have only fast chargers at gas stations, and our service people take the cars. It will never be profitable. So I don't think that in the, of course that will change, but it's probably 3, 4, 5 years until in Budapest we can profitably operate electric cars, unless we completely change the way we operate and somehow be able to convince the customer to do the charging on their own private time, which I don't see how it's possible to do.
I think it's a very good question. We thought about it when we dimensioned the fleet. We said, okay, we want EVs because we think EVs are an asset for the service and for the customer, but how many do we get out of the 300? So we also went for only 100 because we thought that was the maximum size of fleet we could operate with the charging infrastructure. To give you an idea, with 100 EVs, every night we charge between 10 and 20 of them. So we wait, of course, for them to be low enough in autonomy to go and charge, but currently the charging network is way big enough for us to charge. We are following up closely. The charging network is growing, but in the meantime, there are more and more EVs, not only from operators, but also from individuals. So we are looking closely at the congestion of this network, knowing that an operator will always go for the fastest option, I believe, where you're an individual, you can just plug your car for the night, get it back in the morning, which is not, we cannot leave a car for 8 hours on the charger, it's not possible, but individuals can. So it's just how smartly the network is dimensioned and what type of chargers you have, depending on the need. And if you have a big infrastructure with only like slow charging, this will not make it. You need the right balance between the different kind of charging station.
Okay, thank you. Thinking about the the optimization, do you use the user base with incentive? You mentioned some messages that you're sending in the cars. Do you use some incentive to the users in order to use the user base to do some of the work that you're doing and that you're doing with agents?
Yeah, so for us, we have this incentive if you end the trip in one of our garages, right? But then we don't have to pay the fee, and hopefully they're also plugging it in. So every time you park in one of those, you get some money back for the next trip.
What you?
I think the share of charging done by our customers is around 1%. So we do 99% of the charging of the cars.
So there is no incentive for them to...
There is an incentive. There is something like €7 credit for the next trip. But it's a lot of hassle. So for somebody, like I said, to figure out where is the charging station, download a separate application, go to that fast charger, maybe there's already somebody charging there, then you don't know whether you need to reverse with the back of the car or the front of the car, so you do it three times. Then sometimes the charging doesn't always start. I know because I do it, and it's not just on our network, but on the other electrical network, they have the same issues. 8% of the time, the charging doesn't start. You need to call customer care. No wonder that the customer is not doing it. I think there it is.
Yeah. Just curious, what the parent company, do they have a charging network that you're accessing?
Yes. But even if we had access to the other, that wouldn't solve our issues. If the only way is that the normal places in downtown Budapest, in the suburbs, every street had one or two little chargers, and the customers were finishing the trip, plugging it in for the next customer. I believe in our economical circumstances in Budapest, that's the only profitable way to operate electric cars. No, it's a separate app, yes. That also is not helping, obviously.
Okay, and that's a good transition for the next question about the parent company. Are you getting any value from the fact that you're attached to a parent company? Charging infrastructure, do you save money on that? IT infrastructure, do you get some access to some IT components that you're not paying for, or are you getting at a better price?
I think the biggest advantage, again, is the brand. So when we entered the market, it was very easy to get started. We do get some partnership opportunities and things like that. But again, we are sometimes forced to use the services of IT of an oil company who are working with development rates and development fees that are based for an oil refinery, not for a small startup, which is losing money. So kind of, I think we pay the price back that we are forced to buy our services from a very expensive service provider.
How about you, Martin?
Yeah, well, so our biggest advantage is our sister company, of course. That's the biggest parking company in Nordic, which means that we have access to a lot of garages. And of course, also Sumitomo that we are owned by. We are getting help from them with analyze and all this other stuff.
Okay, and maybe the last question I have for you is around user support, because we talked about the maintenance of the car. Now, in terms of interaction with the customers when they have issues with the car, etc., how is it sized on your side, and how is it structured during the day, during the night, during the weekend? How do you optimize that? Wants to go first?
I can go first. So in our company, we only handle really tougher cases, like finance questions or if there was some damage or something like that. And then, as I said, our sister company, they have a big support organization, so we out-insource to them. So they are handling the support. And then in special holidays and so on, when even they are closed, then it's a third party we have. So we have support 24/7. I don't know how many they are working. They are just, you know, handling it when people are calling.
How about you?
So our customer care is fully in-house, on-site. Seven people, five of them normal employees, two of them are students, covering all 24 hours of 7 days of the week. It's not the cheapest option, but I look at this part of the business as we are not focusing on cost, but really on providing good customer service, because we do have a lot of service defects. So a lot of things can go wrong, and we must have very good customer service. That's the way we approach it.
Okay, thank you. That's all you want to go ahead?
Yes, for us, so we also really wanted to offer 24/7 customer service. It's important. Any emergency can happen at night or weekend. And so the way we built it, we have in-house the week, like four peaks of activity during the day, and the nights and weekends are outsourced to a third-party company, which is trained. So there are two things. When it's in-house, it's not only receiving inbound calls or emails, it's also a lot of outbound calls to customer follow-up of payments. There are plenty of things happening during the week. And when it's outsourced for nights and weekends, it's more about answering emergencies. So for us at the beginning, when the utilization is still quite low, so the number of questions is also quite, or emergencies quite low. So we don't want to go, we didn't want to go full blast with 24-hour in-house team. Maybe this is what will happen, because I think on quality, we really see the difference when we have someone really aware of all the specificity of the service. The quality of the answer is just quite perfect, and our user loves it, very good feedback. We see the difference when we have outsourced company dealing with our questions. But at the moment, I think it's the right setup. It may change in the future, but we have the right balance. And also one thing we focus a lot on is to reduce the number of calls. At the beginning, people were calling just to know the price of the service, just to know why they registered and they were not approved yet, but they registered like 5 minutes ago. So we said, guys, that's not possible. We need to reduce this flow. We can't manage that. Otherwise, we'll end up with a call center with 20 people. So what we just did, we've kind of hidden the phone number. You can still find it, but you need to search for it. And believe me, when the user really needs to find it, but for a question on registration or payment, they will not do that. We have changed the message that you hear when you call the call center. Now it's telling you, hey, if you call for a question regarding your registration or payment, press 1. You press 1, and then you say, oh, but just send an email. And so we just move them to the email flow, which is much better for us. It's a real gain in terms of efficiency. And again, anyway, if they call at night for a registration question, they will have someone from the call center, the outsourced call center, which will not be able to help, because we don't want those guys to be involved in registration. So there are some strategies with that. We reduced significantly the number of calls to the call center. It dropped by 50%. It really helps. Customer satisfaction is at the same level, basically, and the cost, of course, is maintained. And now we really work hard on ramping up this outsourced call center. We provide very precise script scenario. Now we know the 5 main reasons why user call. So we just guide them with giving very precise scripts so that they can give answers. Those guys work for other companies, so they have a question for Coca-Cola, then they have a question for a bike, and then they have a question for A1 Go. So they will never reach the level we have in-house. That's not something we hope, but we want to get them to the highest level of knowledge possible. But still, in terms of cost, it's efficient.
Thank you. One last question, task question. What are you planning to do in the next 12 months to optimize the operations from a car management, user management point of view?
When you said that question, I was afraid you are going to ask about car cleanliness. And I think it's a very, very serious part of operation. And I think that's one area that we really should be doing better, because now after 4 years we should have figured out. And I think by now just 2 weeks ago we have started a new hygiene program as the top priority of the customer. And after trying a lot of things, we find that the best combination going forward is a combination. Basically, our car cleanliness program has 3 pillars. The first pillar is the customer. So, you know, all of the dirt is coming from the customer. Some of it is inevitable on your shoes, which is natural, you cannot do very much. And the other part is from nonchalant behavior. Let me just put it like that. So more customer education, not necessarily fees and kind of punishments, whatever, psychologically or financially, but more like warnings and giving feedback. So that's the first pillar, the customer. The second pillar is this mobile cleaning, which is ticket-based. So basically, what we have now started, that we have this happy smiley, natural smiley, and sad smiley, and we have, if we have 3 consecutive sad smileys, then we have an immediate mobile cleaning to that car. But that's not enough, and we have tried several waterless mobile companies, and on top of that, we still need to add station-based, proper, old-fashioned, inside and outside car cosmetics. Every 2 to 3 months, every car has to be cleaned, you know, with the textile cleaner that pushes the steam, the hot water into the carpets and the textiles, because for the smell and everything, this waterless cleaning is just not the same level of cleanliness, and our cars are getting a lot of use. So, you know, this is getting used like a lot more car. So we have this three-pillar approach next for the plan for the next couple of months.
Thank you. How about you, Martin?
I think one of the very time-consuming thing is to handle all the parking fines we have. That we are definitely looking into now, trying to automate it a bit with some AI. The other thing is we are transitioning to longer trips, subscriptions, both B2C and B2B. And that's, of course, new processes that's taking a long time to do. It's you know, there's a lot with subscription that has questions. You need to write a contract. For longer trips, they usually want, you know, a home charger where you can plug into the socket. So there needs to be some interaction. So that's definitely something we will be working on to make sure it's digital, so as less errors as possible happening or missing.
Vincent?
Maybe one thing I can add up to the cleanliness point, which we share, I think, is key to the business. At the moment, what we start to do, it's never obvious when you find a car that's dirty. You will always think it's the previous customer, but maybe it's the one before him, and you never know. So now we start making reports, and we find a car that's obviously dirty, abnormally dirty. We just report a list of user IDs, and then we cross files, and if one user is in the last 5 trips of 10 dirty cars, it's likely it's him, so the minimum giving a call. So on top of optimizing the cleaning operation, working on the user base is really key. We are also very cautious in terms of registration, which customers we want on the service or not, do they meet our criteria of age of driving license. So that's really key to control the flow. And one of the challenges that we have now at A1Go is the density of the fleet, or what can become a challenge, because we are increasing the home zone. So we just increased the beginning of September, and we also operate at the airport. So the fleet kept the same size, 300 cars, but it's more and more diluted in the bigger and bigger area. So we need to go smarter with relocating cars. And for example, one challenge that we have at the moment is the airport, where people go to the airport on Friday evening for the weekend, and they will never take the car back before Sunday evening. So do we really want to have cars staying for 2 days at the airport? Or do we send a guy to bring the car back on Saturday to the city center and then back to the airport? That's questions we ask ourselves. And of course, we don't want to have agents to do that. So what we do at the moment, we rely on train drivers or plane drivers that work at the airport. So we know there is a flow of those guys going there at work. How do they usually get there? They take the shuttle from the central station to the airport, which is not very convenient. There is one shuttle every 30 minutes. They don't pay for it, of course, so that's the only advantage. So what we offer to them is a free trip from the airport or to the airport, just when we need it. So we say, hey guys, at the moment we have too many cars at the airport. If you want to bring back, you can. So they just bring the cars back. So we don't engage a cost, but the cars will be sitting at the right place for the weekend. So that's the kind of strategy we try to put in place. And we don't want to start keeping our cars across the whole road, so it doesn't really make sense.
Thank you. Do you want to add anything? We're done, so we're... Let's open to the questions. Anyone has a question? I'm sure there's a lot of questions on that topic because you're all concerned about it.
So you are obviously using in the front office and back office Vlog tool. Which other software are you using to operate your fleet, like Slack, Trello, or any rebalancing software? To communicate with your guys on the field.
Thank you for the question. So the question was if you guys couldn't hear in the back, In addition to the VULO front and back office, what other auxiliary IT services we are using? So we have a billing system, which is locally developed by our owner, the oil company, which is not working very well, but at least it's very expensive. So that's one. We are using a couple of solutions for sending newsletters. I think it's called Mondrill. We are using there is some very, very small stuff. I think one thing that we are also using, I don't know what should call it, but we download all the data from the Bulog servers, and we kind of build our own little database or data lake, and we take data out from there. So we let's call it a data analytical system, which is again developed in-house by our IT provider from the oil company, which is again not working that well, but at least it's very expensive.
But you are not using Tableau?
We are using Tableau, absolutely. It's fantastic, and I can't wait for to get more reports and more features in Tableau. It's very, very helpful. I use it every single day.
Okay. And for rebalancing, you do it by hand or just by experience?
Yeah. So the question is on rebalancing, what do we use? So we do have actually a partner. They are based in Vienna. Sweetcrad is the name of the app. The company is called Ubiq. And they are integrating with our systems. So basically, we are paying customers a couple of euros through their app to move cars from bad locations to good locations. And we find that a very, very good addition to smart pricing, because smart pricing is helping very much with cars in cold areas, but it doesn't solve the issue of getting cars to where they are needed. It's just solving the issue of removing the car from a cold zone, but it can easily end up in another cold zone, and it doesn't give customers the incentive to enter the cars. So we have a combination of this smart pricing from Bulog and this external partner that we are using people. I call them fanatics because, I mean, they, for a couple of euros of credit, they are willing to move a car from a cold area to that downtown area.
Okay. And are you integrating a mass system or
not? Like a mass transit?
Yes.
Not yet. We are looking into it, but it hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
Vincent, you want to answer the question?
Yes, we use, just want to add some examples on the Tableau thing. It's a really, really good tool for us to manage our operations. For example, now we use it to detect any cancellation of vehicle when there are repetitive cancellation of trips on the same vehicle. We have a daily report in Tableau that helps us. And if there have been more than four cancellations in a row on one trip,
it probably has a wheel clamps on it.
Yeah, either the car, I don't know, puncture or broken or something, or it's inside a private parking. And that's something we have a lot in 314 that can happen a lot. People just park the car inside the house, and they just end their trip inside the house and they take it back the day after. So now we detect that. It's very, very poor experience when you're a customer, you walk to a car, you do your 10 minutes of walking, and just it's next door, just can't access. So that's something we're really fast against for fleet availability, customer experience. Tableau is a great tool for us to have that. And we also use Tableau a lot. So we spoke about using customers to relocate cars. We also noticed that some customers in Lyon who have some hills, so they love to go down the hill by bike or scooter or whatever, or walking. But in the evening when they are tired, they just go up by car. And we have customers creating really big accumulations of cars like this all during the week. So now we even call those customers, say, hey, it's very targeted audience, but we call them and say, hey, if you bring the car back in the city center, I do X credit. So that's something in order to see it, to use the Tableau thing. And it's very, very tactic stuff that we put in place. But we need to be able to analyze the data. And that's not in the back office or in front office that we will be able to do it. So for us, it's really helpful.
Yeah?
I have a question regarding the UM. managing the punishment, you can move the customers. How big is it? How do you use it on a daily basis? For the cleaning fees, for the parking fees, for the daily payment fees, and stuff like that. Do you use it a lot? Is it like this small?
Parking and speeding is just immediately transferred to the customer with a handling fee of 10 euros or something like that. Cleanliness, we very, very rarely give a fine unless it's a very obvious case of somebody just putting out cigarettes on the armrest, things like that. But if just it's normal dirt, then we don't give fines because it's very difficult to know who is the last person who really did it. And obviously that would be a terrible user experience if somebody gets a fine on addition of having to experience a dirty car. So we try to just do warnings instead.
Okay, maybe another question, a question, one last question.
Yeah, you talk about you get people, you incentivize them to move cars from good, bad locations to good locations. How do they see the car? Like, how do they know to do this? Is this integrated in your app?
It's a completely separate application developed by our partner.
So a customer has to open up a different app?
Yes.
Are there cars I can move to there?
Yes.
You
have to be first a member with us, and then also a member with them, and they also serve another car sharing company in Budapest. In fact, they were the first ones, so they are even doing multi-clients in that sense.
Yeah. Okay, maybe a question for you. Are we missing anything in all the things that we've discussing on optimization? Do you have something to tell us that you're doing and that could bring value to everyone? Anyone?
Yeah, just short. So we have the home zone, and in addition to the home zones, we have something like 15 or 20 islands. The islands are in two different categories. One is something like 2 euros, the other one is 4 euros. So if you finish a trip on these remote islands, then we charge additional island fee, but only when you close that trip. Obviously not when you start the trip, because then you bring the car back from the island to the home zone. We try to tell them, but sometimes we cannot get that information so clearly to them. So sometimes we have a complaint from that.
Yes, Tim?
I guess one thing that's a question and sort of joined with something that we have started, which I think is quite effective. We in Wellington, that's sort of where we started, but we're actually, Mevo is the service provider at the airport valet. So when you go to the airport with your own car, drop it to be cleaned, it's our team that cleans those cars, and that means that we get free access. We manage the facility there for free. We make margin as well on the cleaning, and because so many of our cars rotate through the airport, we can tactically take the cars when they come. If they're dirty, our team will check them, and we have 2 full-time people at the airport in Wellington cleaning all these private cars. So I guess it would be good to hear about anyone else who has sort of facilities set up as well, because obviously it can be quite a big expense. But for us, we found airports can be maybe a good location where there's an existing facility, you can take over maybe from an existing supplier, run something on the side that is also very beneficial to car sharing from a cost perspective.
And it's a need for that special allowance to be in there, because more or less it's always the same provider at the airport. They are there for ages, and now they have special permission, and they have to pay a lot for it on a monthly basis, besides the fee for the area and so on.
Yeah. What happened in Wellington during COVID is that because the airport was so quiet, the provider pulled out. So we've sort of seen now there's a bit of an opportunity for us maybe in other airports too to do the same thing, to say, hey, you know, you need a low cost, you know, you don't want to, yeah, you have to provide the service. In New Zealand, it's contractual with our airline, but the airports have to provide a valet. So yeah, it's maybe a unique circumstance, but it's worthwhile.
Building on that, profit sharing with the airport,
yeah.
And then quality. So they really struggle with quality of the previous suppliers, whereas we can.
What we're doing in Lyon, which is kind of the same idea, but a bit less cost, is that the cleaning company that does the cleaning of the Lyon and the car also clean the cars of the other car sharing operators. And of course, that's beneficial to everyone, because the guys are more productive on the field, cost drops significantly. So yes, in terms of sharing, we started thinking about sharing mobility, you can also share much more cleaning the airport, so it's a great event.
Yes. It is first.
Okay. If you speak about cleaning at the airport, for me it's the most beneficial thing that we can do if you refer to the return rate. So you have to exactly know which plate number is how many times at the airport per month, so you can use it very effectively. But my question is, if you use the airport provider for the rental cars, maybe, yeah? They offered us in the past, okay, if you have time, yeah, we can do the car sharing cars. Because they didn't hire additional guys, instead of they having their standard team there, and if they have some free capacities, they go to our cars and clean the cars. This was the case in the past, right? But unfortunately, we have the same peak times like car rentals. So, and that's why it's otherwise it's too expensive to order additional staff, right? That our cars at the same time clean that all the rental cars have to be. So how
did
you manage that? Do you have the same issues about that? Or?
You mean for the cleaning, right? For sharing the
cleaning? Yeah.
Well, the airport, we don't really do cleaning at the airport because it's 30 minutes from Lyon, so we don't want our guys to move there. They only do when there is an accumulation of cars, so they have a chance to clean 20 cars in a row, so they do it because it's efficient. And now in terms of what we have to manage is the priority of the team between the different operators. If there are two cars, one of the Ongo and one of the competitor, which one do they clean first? So the way we tackle it is that we just set SLAs with the company, and which is very easy to track. Basically, we track time between the moment the ticket is raised, it's created, and the moment it's completed. And this is, so there are bonus or values for the company, depending on how fast they clean. So that's how we incent them.
Eric, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, no, question for really everyone in the room around islands or satellite home zones, remote home zones. If anyone's using internal SLAs to ensure consistent supply, or if the idea is much more focused, you find, to get cars back into the main zone. Keen to just hear any learnings on satellite home zones.
So again, we are using two methodology. The first is dynamic pricing, and the second one is this third party scheme where normal or very enthusiastic customers can move cars back for a small credit. And we find that the combination of these two is tackling that rebalancing quite well.
Next question.
We have we pay a concession fee to the airport for being able to be there, and on top of that we give something like 15% of our revenue to the airport. And then we give us one of their official parking lots, which is 5 minutes walking from the terminal.
Yes, it's kind of the same mechanism for us. But I think the airport, we should look at the airport as a profitability center. We should be profitable on this activity. But for us, it's a real asset for user acquisition as well. Sometimes we just present Leyongo as a shuttle service from the airport for 20 euro, which is much cheaper and much faster than any other solution. So yes, maybe we'll make less margin on a trip to the airport, but then we have a customer register to the service that has had his first experience and that we make all the trips. So for us, the airport is a thing we have a lot in our narrative. So it's very strategic for us to do that, even if it costs more than operating on public space in terms of user experience, it's great.
So you don't also pay for the time that you spend in the airport, you also pay a concession and then?
Yeah, it depends on the number of trips or revenue. depending on what we use to say. Because anyway, we have dedicated spots. It's the Leo Ngo logo is on the floor, it's painted on the floor, so it's really private space that anyway will not be used by anyone else. So we pay a fixed fee for the space plus part of the road.
Yeah, we also have 15 dedicated parking spots with our brand painted on them, and then we have an overflow fee if we get in additional cars.
Okay, Gregory?
Yes, it is, and I mean, obviously, we charge it to the customer, but probably we could be doing more in preventing these situations happening. In Budapest, sometimes it's not very clear, even that I lived there 40 years. You know, we have this combination signs that you can park here between 6 and 8, only on Fridays, only if it's you know, in the summer and when it's below 20 degrees, and then you don't know where you can park. So obviously, if the city made the situation better, that would be the best solution. Maybe we could somehow integrate some GPS-based warning, but it would have to have a very good precision that please double check if you want to park here, because maybe it's an illegal zone. But the problem with this is that, you know, this is one handicap, you move 1 meter and then it's not handicapped anymore. So then you would have an issue of the customer is actually in the right position, but we are questioning whether the customer is parking in a legal location or not. But if you could have a better precision, and in downtown Budapest we have these, you know, old buildings which are like 6-7 floors with a very narrow streets with relatively poor GPS signal, and then we have a precision of plus minus 5 or 10 meters, and that's not good enough to do this kind of service.
How about you, Martin, in Stockholm? Because I know that there is a lot of automation in the street for the parking.
Yeah, we actually don't have so many cars that like automatically tow because they park wrong. We have engaged or trying to learn our customers how to park, what the rules are. We even have stickers in the car, you cannot stand close to a, you know. So they're not getting towed that many times. When they are towed, it's because people leave them with too little battery, so we can't. And the EV cars we have now, when you have under 7%, I think, then you can drive it in 7 kilometers an hour, which is not so fun to find a charging spot. But we also have this, mobile charging that you can put in to get from there.
Okay. Vincent, you want to say a word on it?
Yes, this was one of our concerns before launching 300 cars and free floating in a very crowded area where there's less and less space to park. To give you an idea, so in Lyon we have a green municipality, and their target on the 5 years they have at the city hall is to cut 65% of the parking spots for cars in the city, so that's huge. So what we do, of course, we work a bit on the long road. We ban some areas where we notice that many cars are taken to the park. But we also work closely with police. So basically, it's not that we made a deal with the police, but we committed on the fact that we could come faster than the towing company. And when they call us, we know we have 20 minutes to get there to send an agent. If we're not there about 20 minutes, they are allowed basically to take the car. So since the beginning of the one go 1 year ago, we had 5 cars taken to the park, so it's very low. And when you say it, we can always charge it to the customer, but then in terms of experience, it can happen for a customer to park on the market. And you said it, he parked on the Tuesday evening and it's not allowed as of Wednesday morning 5 a.m. But when he parked, it was allowed. So how do you manage this case? Do you absorb the cost as an operator, or do you want really to charge your customer, knowing that he parked on the low spot? So it can bring also some discussion, some bad discussion with the customer. So we really want to avoid that, and it also reduces a lot fleet availability, because one thing is to know that your car has been taken to the pound. And in Lyon, unfortunately, the area where they bring the car is in the open. So it's just an available car in the palm, and we just don't know it has been taken there. So of course we will know, because we'll see that the car has not been moving for 2, 3, 4 days, so then we go and collect it. So on top of the fees, you pay the daily rate of the pound, and then it's huge, and you pay for the car that doesn't make any trip. So the, what we really focus on is not having the car taken there, and it's much better. And parking is can be would be the major issue in reverting also for the image of the service. And when we have a customer that parks a car on the spot dedicated for handicapped people, for example, this one will probably get rid of him. We'll invoice him, charge him, but then we get rid of the customer. Because in terms of image, if a day-one go car or any more car is parked on a not allowed spot, then it's very bad. So we also want to be seen as a nice player, as a nice operator.
And I've heard that from at least two other customers that relationship with the authority is very important to be informed when something is happening with one of your car. That's I think what you're doing is very similar to what I heard.
They love wine in Lyon, so yeah, bring the wine.
Okay, any final question before we stop this session? Because I think we're already late. All good. All right. So thank you for this panel.